Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name is Dice.
And I'm Austin.
All right, Mr. Austin, how's it going, sir?
It's going good. How are you, Mr. Dice?
I am doing quite well.
What are you puffing on there, Dice?
I'm smoking something. You got me giggling, but it's hard. I'm smoking on a Diamond Crown Julius Caesar.
Ooh. That's so interesting. And what Hennessy are you pairing that with?
Oh, my friend. I got this little...
I know you're pairing that with Hennessy.
I got this little smoking device, and I made myself a smoky old-fashioned using pecan wood or pecan wood, wherever the fuck you're from.
why you gotta bring geography into it?
Yes, pecan.
Oh man.
All right, now everyone knows what kind of Hennessy I'm drinking. Everybody knows what I'm smoking. What are you smoking?
I'm smoking a let's see, what is this? It is a Diamond Crown Julius Caesar.
Oh, look at that.
Samesies. Man, we're getting better at this shit.
It's almost like we're trying.
Yeah, weird. And I am pairing that with a new whiskey. It's the Hollinghouse brand, but it's a blend of straight whiskeys.
Oh. Okay.
So whiskey. Yeah, so straight whiskey. They've blended different years together and stuff, and they put it in the bottle. It's very good. It's a little stronger than I think I was expecting, but it's good. I'm thoroughly enjoying this.
You know what I like to do one of these times, sir?
What's that?
I think we should bypass a cigar episode and have a whiskey episode. Not today. Well,
that doesn't make sense. You gonna drink whiskey?
I will drink whiskey. If you have a whiskey episode, I'll drink whiskey.
All right, you heard it here first. We got to hold it to him.
So, more to come. We'll look at that later. We'll talk. All right. So, our cigar segment, we're going to talk about the cultivation of tobacco.
So, cultivation of tobacco is, that's going to be very interesting, because I'm interested to see how it goes from a seed to a plant to this delicious stick that I have in my hands that I light on fire and smoke. And then our leadership topic. This one's a good one, Dice. I think you'll like this leadership topic. Some thoughts on this leadership topic, but I think we're going to disagree.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, first I got to announce the leadership topic.
Oh, yes.
It was submitted to us by Instagram user. I believe her name is Hope, H-O-P-E-E or whatever. It's on Instagram, whatever. She submitted, she said, what to do after losing respect of your support. Basically, the question was, what happens if your subordinates lose respect for the leader or the manager?
Yeah. I got some thoughts on this one. Okay. I'm looking forward to the discussion, because I have some very, very specific thoughts, because I've had this happen, not to me, because I'm amazing, but I've lost respect for other leaders who were not as amazing
as me.
And no, not as much. I'm kidding. But I'm looking at the show notes, and I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited to get to it. But let's get to the cultivation of tobacco. Did you know that tobacco plants are seeded indoors and are usually transplanted into the fields 6 to 10 weeks after planting and sprouting?
Well, you're asking me. Yes, I did know. The reason why I know is not because I've been to any tobacco farms or anything, but I have read a few amazing books. There's actually a YouTube movie about the cultivation of tobacco.
Is there?
Yes, I can't remember the name of it.
Well, then you suck.
Yeah, I do. It's actually really good.
I'm on it today, too, by the way, folks.
I see that.
I'm on one today. Dice got me fired up before the episode, just so everyone knows it's his fault.
Yay. Anything I can do to help out.
Mm-hmm.
So the plants are carefully pruned so the leaves grow to a necessary size. It's normally in some kind of greenhouse of some sort. Plants that produce the outer wrappers of cigars are usually kept covered with cloth to protect them from the sun, and the plants take several months to mature in the fields.
Is that what gives the name shade?
I believe you would be correct, the mundo!
It's like I know stuff. So then after the harvesting, the tobacco leaves must be cured, obviously, in order to develop their characteristic aroma and flavors. The leaves are usually cured when they have passed from bright green, flexible, fresh leaves and dried to a brown or yellowish leaves. Chemically, though, the chlorophyll, which gives leaves their green color, breaks down and is replaced by carotene. Curing these plants, the harvested plants are strung into narrow strips of wood called lathes, and they're hung from the ceiling in a well-ventilated curing barn. And then in the dry weather, they may cure simply by hanging. Usually that's called air curing, right?
Yeah.
Pretty easy. They all may also be cured via flue, and this involves them being hung in the small barn, which is then heated from 90 degrees to 170 degrees Fahrenheit, or, you know, Celsius for our metric users is 32.2 to 77 degrees Celsius. And the temperature must be carefully monitored in order to prevent the extreme rapid drying, because that can make them brittle and not easily able to be wrapped. And then usually sawdust or hardwood or something can be burned in the curing barn to kind of help aid and dry out that area, so that way it's not humid, because these are getting harvested down towards the equator, right? Down in that tropical zone where everything is just moist.
Yeah. A tobacco ban.
Yeah. So they got to dry it out.
Well, I know if they use wood and different type of things to burn in the barns or the pilons or however they want to do that curing. I know different types of woods and whatever they burn can also help add to the flavor and to the aroma of the actual leaves, because all that smoke is being, you know, pretty much secreted right there in the plant while it's curing.
Yeah.
Now, I know we spoke about the fermenting a little bit before, especially when we talk about the Maduro and the Oscuro.
Mm-hmm.
And just in general, after the leaves are cured, they are sorted by color and size. Smaller broken leaves are used for the cigar filler. Large leaves are for the inner wrapper or the binder. And even the larger fine leaves are usually grown in the shade or under cloth and set aside for the outer wrapper. The leaves are tied into bundles called hands, as in 300 hands make this? No. 10 to 15 leaves each. The hands are packed in boxes and large casks called hogsheads. I like that, hogshead.
I do too.
Okay. The tobacco is kept in these hogsheads for a period of time. It can be from 6 months to up to 5 years. They undergo a chemical change during this process, during this period, and referred to as fermentation. Fermentation, the aroma and taste of the leaf develops. Cigar tobacco is usually fermented longer than other tobacco, like cigarettes. Fermentation for 2 or 5 years is typically for high quality cigars. After fermentation, the leaves are manually sorted again by highly trained workers.
Right, the fermentation process takes the nicotine that's in the tobacco plants and actually lowers that nicotine level. And also, this is when the plants give off all the ammonia. So if somebody says, oh, this plant hasn't been fermented long enough or something like that, it's because it's got an ammonia taste type to it, that bitter ammonia taste that you can taste, you know, if it's in the air or something like that, if you're ever working with it. That's the fermenting process, is to remove that ammonia or remove and kind of reduce the amount of tobacco in these leaves.
I do know sometimes when we're doing our little play with the cigars, trying to do a taste test and all that, you know, whereas unbanded cigars that we try every now and again, sometimes if it's still a young cigar or still new, sometimes I know we have to take in consideration of the ammonia, because we know it's not fermented all the way quite yet, because we're just getting a sample of it or a tasting. Sometimes it's an early tasting or whatever it may be, and it would just need to sit around just a little bit longer to get all that out. So sometimes you may get one. If you get one in a bundle or something, just let the other sit for a little bit before you light those up.
Yeah, and if you go down to one of the tobacco producing or cigar producing countries and you get a freshly hand rolled cigar, smoke that shit right away. Yes. Otherwise, because they're rebundled into a cigar, they're going to kind of start that fermenting process again and off gas even more ammonia during that time period. So you just got to be careful of that. So you may get it and you're like, I have this for a week and I'm going to smoke it now. No, don't do it. It's just going to taste of ammonia. You missed your chance. Now you got to wait for it to age a little bit longer so that off gas is out of ammonia.
Yeah.
So after they're fermented, they're stripped. This is basically where the filler leaves have their main vein or the stem removed. Otherwise, you know, you get that stem in your cigar and it's not going to burn evenly. Usually this is done by hand, sometimes done by machine, depending on who it is. If it's done by hand, a worker usually takes a thimble knife. So yes, it is a thimble with a knife attached to it. Clips the vein near the tip and pulls it down, and then the worker stacks the stripped leaves into piles called books or pads. And then if it's done by mechanical or machine, a worker inserts the tobacco leaf into the machine under a grooved circular knife. And then by depressing a foot pedal, the worker causes the knife to lower and cut out the vein, and they can stop the machine with the foot pedal and stack the stripped leaves. Those are usually wrapped in bales and stored for further fermentation, because after that, right, after they've been sorted into this is filler, this is binder, this is wrapper, based on the quality, color, and shade of those leaves, they're stripped and stored for further fermentation. The bales usually can be shipped at this point. So if you are a company like, let's just say, J.C. Newman, right, who we're smoking tonight. You know, they could, they could buy tobacco from a place in the DR or something like that, and they can ship that to their warehouse or their factory in, I don't know, Nicaragua or Tampa. I know they have a factory in Tampa.
They do.
And then they can use those bales in that final production and go from there. And that's how these go for from one country to the next to get all bundled and made together. And so usually just before those leaves are ready to for manufacture into cigars, they are steamed to restore any lost humidity, so that way when they're rolling it doesn't crack and you don't get these the cracks in your cigar. And then usually they're sorted again after they've been steamed.
Seems to be a lot of sorting going on.
Weird. It's like they want to put out a good product.
Well, we want nothing but the best tobacco, says every cigar manufacturer ever. Where does the not best tobacco go? Newports?
Classic cigars.
I was thinking like Winston, Black and Mild.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Swisher.
Usually after everything's all sorted, you got your humidity back right from the re-steaming. Then they can start the hand rolling process. Fine cigars are usually rolled by hand. Cigar rolling is a skilled art. It may take a year for a roller to become proficient. The filler must be packed evenly for the cigars to burn smoothly, and the wrapper wound in an even spiral around the cigar. Hand cigar makers usually work in small factories. Each worker sits at a small table with a tray, sort the tobacco leaves on it, and provide enough space for them to roll out the cigar. First, the worker selects from two or six leaves for the filler, and they are placed on the top. The others are rolled into a bunch. Then the worker places the bunch onto a binder leaf and rolls the binder leaves in like almost a can fashion around the filler. The unfinished cigars are placed in an open wooden mold that holds them in shape until they can be wrapped. Now, reason why I like the hand rolling portion of this process is because I know all the different shapes, like a bellicoso, torpedo, or any of these other different shapes. that cigar roller or torcedor has to be a skilled roller. They normally have to have done it longer than a year, because a regular tobacco cigar roller is about a year. But to be skilled, especially for something like a Davidoff or something, they have to have quite a few years under their belt. So I've always said, and will continue to say, any cigar that's out of the normal shape is not rolled by a novice cigar roller. They have to have some time under their belt. So normally, those cigars with the different shapes are have less construction issues.
Right. Yeah. And this is, they're just wrapping the, they're, I don't want to say wrapping. They're just rolling the filler kind of at this point, and then maybe like maybe the binder. Because then they take the wrapper, right, which is obviously the most difficult step, and takes partially completed cigar out of that mold and places it on the wrapper leaf. And then usually they take a kind of rounded knife called a chavetta, and they trim off any irregularities from the filler. And then they roll the wrapper leaf around the filler and the binder 3.5 times and secure it to the end with a small amount of vegetable paste. So that, you know, I mean, if you've ever tried to roll something around something, around something, around something after it's all been bunched together, you know that you have a hard time if the middle wants to unroll on you or, you know, do all these other things. And these people are working in a factory on a floor being watched, and they a good torcedor could probably pump out what, 100-150 cigars a day.
Yeah,
that's, I mean, I don't think I could even pump out one a day.
I will hope at least one.
If I do, it's gonna be a shitty one.
It's gonna, well, that's when it, like several shapes and sizes, and when I think of I'm trying to roll one, I'd probably be a cheroot, which is open in at both ends. It's just pretty much the leaves just rolled up.
Yeah. Like,
who rolled this crap? What is this, a joint? What are you rolling, a blunt?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
You're fired.
Okay. Can I smoke some cigars on my way out?
You're in your first third?
Yes. Yes.
Well, I know we didn't talk about the cold draw.
We kind of
did off air. Our apologies. Cold draw, I remember we discussed it was more of a fig.
Fig chocolate, kind of?
Chocolatey. My first third, I'd say cedar, and it's creamy.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit of a black pepper on the back end.
Oh, nailed it, sir. I was waiting to see if he was going to say it, because if he didn't, I was.
Yeah,
I definitely get that black pepper. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's right there on the back end. I got it more on the retrohale when I retrohaled, but yeah, it's there. It's very good.
I hate you.
I see what I have to deal with, people.
You say retro hell, and that makes me automatically, oh, let me get that. Oh, I suck at this.
You're welcome. So, you know, as we've alluded to, cigars come in several different shapes and sizes. You know, everything from the smallest to the largest, you know, half Corona, petite Corona, Corona, Corona Gorda, Lonsdale, double Corona. All of them are different. They all take a little bit different type of skill to make this happen.
Correct.
So after they're all rolled, the cigars have to pass inspection. And once they pass inspection, they're placed on trays and passed on for bands and cellophane, if they come with cellophane. And usually passed to workers expert in sorting by shade. That way, all the boxes have a similar shade of wrapper in them. Yes, there are differences of shade color from cigar to cigar. These things are natural leaves that are rolled. There's a little bit of difference because nature's not perfect. Yeah, they sort the finished cigars according to minute variations in wrapper color, and the cigars with the same wrapper shade are then boxed together. Right? And then they're, of course, done quality control checked.
Well, the shades, I always make a note of this because I always found this fascinating. When it comes to boxing them in shades, the female is the one that does it more than the male.
100%.
Females can see more color.
Yeah.
Chartreuse, fuchsia, pink, salmon, fucking red. That's what the color it is. Fucking red.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand. I don't get it. Do you like this color or this color? They're the same fucking color.
This is more chartreuse.
Whatever, bitch. It's plum.
I don't know what you just said right now, but I'm going to find that disrespectful, and I'll probably fight you.
I feel offended right now, and I don't even know why.
As you was alluding before I cut you off, everything has a quality control. Cigar, check for quality during each step of the manufacturing process. Apparently yours wasn't. The quality of the tobacco leaves is very important. Leaves are sorted and inspected after curing, after fermentation, before they're made into cigars, after they're finished being made in cigars. They're checked for consistent diameter, weight, size, draw, like pretty much every process of this cigar making, cigar cultivation of tobacco has a quality check.
Do you think that's part of the 300 hands?
It better be. I wonder if it's the same quality person.
It better not be.
What? You mean to tell me I can't check the diameter and the shade of color that you chose?
Fuck no.
Yes, sir. I hate you.
We're on one today, guys. This is a good one. I like it. So they do all this stuff and they check it, you know, they use a draw tool to check it. They go through a ring gauge to check sure the ring gauge is consistent, make sure there's nothing poking out or going crazy. They measure their length with a ruler. Appearance is critical to the individual cigars, and a box of cigars must also be inspected so that at least the top layer is consistent in color. And then the quality of wrapping must be inspected for hand-rolled cigars, and the veins of the wrapper should appear in a uniform spiral, and it must be smooth and tight. You don't want no loosey-goosey leaves out here trying to be a wrapper.
Yeah! Fake ass wrappers.
Pitch ass little females.
Take that little yachty.
Oh, man.
Too far? Too far. No. I got it. It's okay. Too far.
All right. So I know we were just in our first third, but this is not a very big cigar.
Yeah, what was it? 65.
What the fuck are you smoking?
Hush. 52. 4 3/4 by 52.
What is in your Hennessy over there? Are you sure you didn't smoke it with some weed and that you used?
It's regular VS. It's an old fashioned. Okay, maybe it's a little strong old fashioned, but it's an old fashioned. Smoky old fashioned.
It ain't a old fashioned if it doesn't have whiskey.
Debatable.
Let's fight about this. No. Yeah.
Take a little break and then come back.
Yeah, let's take a break and come back. We're gonna fight about this on the off air. put it in a sidebar.
Ding ding ding. We'll be back. All right. Hey everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf. All one word.
At Leadership of the Leaf. And please, leave us a comment. Send us a message with whatever questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
At Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Hola mi gente, I'm Wanda Hernandez. I'm CEO of Sticks and Stones Productions, And we are here with Dyson Austin, and you are listening to Leadership of the Leaf.
Welcome back to Leadership of the Leaf. So we just got done talking about the curing and fermentation and cultivation of cigars and the tobacco that is used to make them. Now I want to get into the leadership portion. But before we do that, Dice, are you in your second third?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And what are you getting in your second third?
This is going to be quite curious because I'm curious to which direction you're going to go. It's probably going to be different. I don't know. We'll find out. I'm getting that same cedar, but the creaminess to me has turned to more hints of chocolate, and I'm getting some dried fruit in there, along with that back end of pepper that hasn't went away.
Yeah, the back end of pepper has not gone away. I don't see the cedar as much, but I see the dried fruit. I'm taking my time to make sure I taste this correctly. I get the dried fruit and just a hint of like cocoa or cacao, like a semi-sweet or a dark chocolate.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go ahead and tell the truth. This is my second one.
What?
Yeah, I smoked one last weekend. I think it was Sunday.
Rude.
I think we're still on it. I love it.
I am all over it right now. So our leadership topic, what to do after losing the respect of subordinates. Now, I'm going to say this first and foremost and up front. One.
Oh, are you about to call the baby ugly?
100%.
All right. I'm listening.
One. If you lost the respect of your subordinates, there's almost nothing you can do to gain that respect back, other than a lot of time and a lot of effort. Like, imagine if you lost the respect and the trust of your spouse, right?
Right.
How long and how much time and how much effort are you going to put into that? And is it, do they ever really come back to you? It's going to be on the other person to forgive and start trying to gain that respect back. You can do everything right from the moment you lost it on, and they may never forgive you. And that's nothing you can do about that.
That is true. Like, where are you going? How long are you going to be gone? Why are you wearing that? Is that a new outfit? What's her name? Like, whoa.
Who you with?
Whoa. Yeah, that's true. So losing the respect of a subordinate, if you already lost it, then I guess we're going to go over some ways to, one, maybe help regain that respect back. But more importantly, if these are some steps and procedures that could help prevent you from losing the respect from the beginning.
Like,
is it canoeing?
Stem.
Oh, it does look like a stem. But it's funny because I think ours are burning kind of the same. Look.
Yeah, they are. Interesting.
For those listening, we're comparing our cigar burns. The burn line is pretty good, but it's not canoeing, but it has like this triangle-like shape.
Mm-hmm.
And yours look like it has a stem. Mine does not.
Yeah. I've had problems ashing this entire time. Oh, I'm going to keep fucking with it.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, I just hope this has never happened to anybody. I know that it has. But as a person who has lost respect for a leader, it's very hard to gain that respect back. Just because my perception of you is always going to be reminiscent of what you did.
The moment you lost respect.
Yeah, and normally, and I say this for anybody, it takes 10 good things to outweigh one bad thing. And I'm talking like 10 big good things to outweigh one bad thing. That's just kind of my math in my head that I usually do, right? So you know, you imagine a public sports figure, right? I don't know. They
Ja Morant.
Ja. Okay, so he posed with a gun, right?
Yeah. Ooh.
Ooh. All right, that's not that big of a bad thing, right? Compare right. that with like Michael Vick.
Ah.
Dog fighting, right? Everybody right. loves their pets. Everyone's yeah. like, ah, fuck that guy. That motherfucker had to work 10 times as hard as he normally had to try to gain that respect of the public back. Now, there are people that just blindly forgave him and said, all right, cool, whatever, you're our guy. We're going to keep doing this. But there's other a large portion of the American public will only ever remember him for being the dogfighting guy.
Right. That's unfortunate. Or not. I don't really give a fuck about him either way.
Right. I'm just saying, like, I'm yeah, using yeah. him as an example.
Good job.
I'm here for you.
Subordinates,
and our listeners.
Subordinates can lose respect of the leader or manager or whatever for a number of reasons. And one way you can tell is they can say, without saying a word, they could show through their actions. Or subordinates can start by showing up late. They could start taking longer breaks. Or they could even start talking by using phrases like, I can't, or I'm not going to do that, or that's not my job. Those are clear signs.
Quiet quitting.
Quiet, yes. Actually, he's quiet quitting today.
There you go. So once you get to this point as a leader, it's not too late. You need to get to the root cause and figure out how to gain your respect, subordinates' respect back. Usually the best option would be to avoid this loss, obviously, from the start, right? But if you can't avoid that, from a subordinate point of view, they may never gain that respect back. But here's a couple things that can gain it back. So it's usually they respect their leaders when they feel respected in turn, right? Yeah. So if they are more creative, motivated, and ultimately productive when they're respected, they usually place a high value on having a leader they can respect and learn from. So if they think that they can't learn from you, or they don't, they can't trust you, you have to try to earn that stuff back.
I definitely worked for someone that I was like, there's nothing I can learn from this guy.
Yeah.
I was on a business trip and I remember that very specifically. I even told everyone else I was very insubordinate when I was discussing it. I was like, I'm afraid you don't know what you're talking about. I have the backing of this book right in front of me. It tells exactly what to do and you want to do the opposite. I'm not doing it.
Yep.
And
I've done that.
Yeah. That point on, I never respect that guy ever again.
Yeah. But some of the big things that you can kind of do is, you know, remember, hey, appearances matter.
Well, yeah.
If you've taken that casual dress code, if your office has a casual dress code and it's usually, I don't know, let's say jeans and a polo, and you decided it'd be fine to wear a wife beater and some cutoff shorts, maybe you took that a little bit too far.
Well,
right?
Yeah. Like you show up in shorts or you slick your hair back into a ponytail or something. Just ungroomed and unkempt looking. Of course, you're going to be looked at differently than maybe a leader or a manager or something that shows up in, I don't know, khakis and a nice little dress shirt, which is going to be different than the average worker who's going to be wearing the company's logo shirt or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I remember working as a waiter during high school, and we had to always wear short sleeve polos and black slacks and, you know, obvious our black non-slick shoes. And our managers were supposed to wear a button-down shirt with like a long sleeve button-down shirt with their choice of slacks and their shoes. And I remember one guy came in and he was just wearing a t-shirt and jeans, and he was supposed to be the manager on shift. And I was like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, immediately I was just like, you don't care. You don't take this job seriously. Why the fuck should I?
Right. Or I guess the new thing people are doing now is wearing a belt, but their pants are still below their waistline. I don't know what that's about. Like, how can I respect you as a manager or a leader if you can't even pull your pants up right? I don't know. So as we discussed, I mean, appearance does make a difference. There's another key part to gaining the respect or keeping the respect or regaining is obviously, we mentioned it so many times with everything dealing with leadership, is communication.
Communication is key.
The importance of employee communication cannot be overstated. Leaders or managers or whatever who don't listen to their staff, that they won't know what's going on in the office. They don't have a pulse on where the rubber meets the road. It's including why they're not respected. By setting up regular feedback sessions, not only will you convey to your workers that you value their opinions, but you also get to know them a little better. You have a better sense of their strengths, a better sense of their weaknesses, and you kind of just get an idea of their life. So it makes it seem, even if you don't care, it makes it seem like you do care.
To me, communication obviously is key, right? We talk about it every time. But if you're not listening to your staff, if you don't know your staff well enough to know what their strengths and weaknesses are, how are you to run a business at all, a profitable business, an efficient business, anything? It'd be like if I had the finance mechanics on the engine of a mechanic, you know, a truck or something, because I'm running a mechanic shop and I got the mechanic sweeping floors and I got the janitor doing the finances. What the fuck am I doing with my life? Like, no, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
You know, if you talk to everybody, they tell you, I'd rather be doing the finances. I'd rather be turning the wrenches. I'd rather just sweep the fucking floors. Like, oh, okay, let me move you guys around. And, oh, look, now I have a much more efficient and better business. Weird how that works, because if I just listen to you guys.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's communication. We will continue to talk about communication.
Yeah. Another thing is demonstrate your trust, right? So you got to empower your employees to take ownership. Encourage them to take the risks, but make sure that they know that you'll back them up if things don't turn out as expected. Show that you trust their good judgment. If you sit there and you say, hey guys, I want you to take a bunch of risks. We got to find a way to grow this company. Sometimes that means taking risks. I trust you guys to take risks. And then they take a risk and you go, what the fuck were you thinking? How dare you waste my money like that? They're never going to take a risk again.
Yeah, no, they'll be scared to take action. Someone comes in and complains about something and then you comp them, I don't know, $7.50 for something or whatever. You comp them and then you get yelled at for it. You're not learning anything. You're just like, you know what? I'll never help someone else out again.
Yeah, nope, not going the extra mile for my people.
I looked around and management wasn't here. So I went ahead and made a power decision to go ahead and take care of the customer or whoever's unhappy or whatever the situation is moving forward. And then management is upset that you did that. Then, yeah, you just burned that employee to where they're not going to, or even worse, manager or leadership or whatever throws that person under the bus for a decision that they made on behalf because management wasn't around or leadership wasn't around.
Yeah. Tell you what Mike Cigar is doing. I have like 3/4 of the cigars burning well, and then the other one turned to like charcoal.
Charcoal?
It's just black and like crunchy. Like it's been overheated and burned too much, like it's already gone out type deal.
Huh.
That's weird. It's weird. Mm-hmm.
You're definitely a lot further along than I am.
I have a lot of problems with this cigar, and I'm not liking it. I'm not blaming the cigar, but it's just weird. I'm gonna keep working on it. But anyways, sorry.
All right.
Just throwing that out there for people to understand what the hell I'm doing.
Another thing you can do is you can watch your mouth. Pay attention to the words and actions. If you're getting less respect at work, it could be because you haven't been behaving or in a professional manner. Keep your language respectable, clean, be discreet when it comes to personal issues, and don't openly criticize other workers and managers and leaders or anyone else in a higher position of chain of command.
Yeah, I would also say this, and maybe it's a little bit later on down, but what, so in the same thing, watch for an action word mismatch on your part, right? If I tell my workers, you guys, and I've said this before, hey guys, you kicked ass this week. I know we had to put in a lot of long hours. I'm gonna comp you time on the back end, and then the back end never comes. People are just losing respect for you. They're like, yeah, we're not trusting you. I'm not gonna stay late and work for that motherfucker ever again. But if you go, hey, you guys kicked ass this week. I like it. Way to go. Keep it up. I know we put in a lot of long hours. I'm gonna make sure each one of you guys gets at least a day off or a half day off or whatever this upcoming week. And then you do it, people are like, dang, all right, I'm gonna work twice as hard for that motherfucker because I know he's gonna take care of me. And yeah, the same thing we've talked about, we had a whole episode about should you curse as a leader.
Yeah, I remember that episode. There was a point in time in my career where my supervisor or boss or whatever made a promise to every worker in the shop. And after he was done, I looked at him and I was like, sir, all due respect, never make a promise you can't keep. And he just looked at me for a long time. And I said it again to him. And because of that, he kept his promise. But if I didn't step up, he was going to fuck everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the whole criticizing other workers and managers. If you start to gossip about other people in leadership positions or other workers to other people, it's going to create a culture of like clicky, backstabbing people. And that's just not the type of place people want to work. That's a very toxic work environment. And nobody's going to respect anybody there. And they're all just waiting to bide their time to get the fuck out.
Well, I know for me, if my boss is bad-mouthing other bosses or other people in the same chain or however you want to see that fit, I kind of lose respect for that person that's starting all that as well. Yeah. Because if you're talking shit about him, then how are you talking shit about your workers, your subordinates? Who else are you talking shit about?
Yeah, and it's only a matter of time until they talk shit about you.
Right.
So just be careful of that. You know, you gotta know when to keep quiet. You know, tirades may earn some fear, but rarely earn respect at work. Right? We had a conversation, I think, one past episode last season, was it better to be feared or respected?
That was a good debate.
I like that one. You got to deal with sensitive work issues or frustrations at private, individual level, rather than broadcasting them during meetings. If I got a beef with Dice, it's never going to come out in this show. It's going to be handled between me and Dice off air. But the opposite's true when it comes to praise. If I have something nothing but good to say, I want to make damn sure that I say it on air so that everybody knows what a good motherfucker this dude is. So be open with your praise, but be closed with your frustrations.
Was it punish in private, but praise in public?
Yep.
Yeah. Perfect. There's no better way to say that. Moving forward, we can as a leader, you should transfer your knowledge, and we even had an episode on that. These are great, man.
Gone over these before.
As a leader, you have the potential to be a valued mentor and teacher. Instructions can be either direct, such as working with the staff member to improve something like their speech, or indirect, such as leading by example. Transferring your knowledge and helping workers succeed, you are training the company's next generation of leaders. I think we had an episode about, you know, you want to train your replacement. What? That's essentially what you're doing there. You want to share the knowledge. There's so many leaders of what are so scared that someone might take their position. You shouldn't be scared about that. You will want that, because if they take your position, where are you going to go? If you're a good leader, if you're a good manager, if you're a good worker, you shouldn't be scared of that at all. I want that. I welcome that. Are you going to give up on life then? Okay, I'll stop.
Getting frustrated with my lighters. All right. Sorry, folks.
It's okay. We understand.
Having cigar problems today. yeah, absolutely. You want to go up. So you got to also be open-minded. You got to have to put your preconceptions, your biases, your, you know, your emotions to the side and listen to an employee's proposal with an unbiased perspective. If you have a conflict, we just said this, I think, in a previous episode not too long ago, just because you don't like the person that brought up the good idea does not mean that it's a bad idea automatically. You have to be able to sit there and say, hey, that's a really good idea. I may not like you as a person or as a worker, but that's a damn good idea. So even if there's a conflict, avoid making those assumptions and be fair. Don't try to show favoritism and give everybody those same chances to succeed. I've seen it time in and time again. Everybody has their one fucking favorite person, and that's who they go to. And that's fine. I get it. People have favorites. But you can't sit there and let that favoritism be known to everybody else.
I'm gonna throw a sidebar in there just because it struck a nerve in me. So there's laws of power, 48 laws of power, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
If I know you're the favorite, yep. I know you're the favorite, and if I say something, we should do plan A, and I know my voice would never be heard, but I know you're the favorite, I'm going to bend your ear and be like, hey, we should do plan A. You should mention that plan A. Do
I've plan done it A. before.
And then what happens is you say, hey, we should do plan A. And whoever the leader or boss will be like, Austin, that was a great idea. We should do plan A. And secretly, I'm the one behind the curtain pulling the puppet strings for you to say plan A. So we're doing what I said from the beginning, but I didn't say it because I know I'm not the favorite.
Yeah, I've done it before myself.
But that's a power move. So that's not what we're talking about here.
Nope. Talk about how to gain respect after you've lost it. You got to stay involved. Don't hide in your office.
Oh, I read this one and I thought of you instantly.
Or socialize just with senior management. I am a huge proponent of people getting out from behind the damn desk, going yes. walking the floor, going walking wherever, and talking with people, seeing how they're doing, seeing what problems they have, if there's anything you can help with. Sometimes you'll be surprised. Here's my thing. I like to get up and walk around just because it's a nice stretch for the day. Don't just stretch and strut around your office. Go for a walk around your office. It'll get your steps in, right? Everyone's trying to hit 10,000 steps.
Yes.
Two, you'll be able to see so much more than you ever would have thought possible. So you can earn that respect by people going, man, every time, before I even have a chance to bring up a problem to the boss, he's already at my desk asking if there's a problem that he can help on. And I just found out about this problem. Why, yes, boss, there is. Could you make a call over to this other department? And I need this report so I can do my report that you requested. Like, that's what you need? Boom, I got you. Make a phone call right then and there. Don't sit there and be like, yeah, I'll get it when I get back, because you'll forget. Just make the phone call right there. Yeah, let me use your phone. Boop, boop, boop. Hey, this is so-and-so. Yeah, hey, I need this stuff sent over to this guy right now. I need it because I need the report because I need this. Yep, cool. Make it happen. I need it within 30 minutes. Got it. Hang up and then follow up. Make sure they got their shit.
That leads go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was say you can sit there and just chat with your people in a casual manner, and you will find out so much more information about your employees, and they'll find out information about you, and it builds that trust.
It just leads me to two things I thought of after reviewing this one. One, I changed a word to this where it says stay involved. I always say I keep my ear to the streets. Of course, that street talk for you know what's going on in the neighborhood, you know what's going on, whatever, right? So that's how I approach that step. The second thing that made me think when I was reading about this topic in the show notes is you. I remember there was one point in time you came into my office, not talking to me because my office was shared amongst others, and I can't remember who it was, but they said something. You was like, motherfucker, get up from your desk and come see what the fuck I'm talking about. Come out here and let me show you. And the person reluctantly kind of looked at me and I was like, motherfucker, he wants to show you. So they got up and actually went out on the floor. Ooh, and they actually got to see exactly what you was talking about instead of just conjuring up whatever in their head that they thought you was talking about. And then when they saw it firsthand, they came back in. You know what? Austin was right. Oh, it's weird how if you get up from behind your desk and take a look of actually what's going on the floor, you have an idea of what is really going on instead of what you thought was going on. Strange how that works.
Yeah, I'm a huge proponent of that. There's a book, and I forget who it is, but it's How to Be an Analog Leader in a Digital Age.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't remember who wrote it, but it talks about, you know, getting up, face-to-face conversations. Don't do everything through email or messaging or whatever. And you know, you get out from behind your desk, you can see things. I read that that book about Ulysses S. Grant. That dude, the minute he stepped off of a out of a train and got to the camp, people were talking about a battlefield and they had a map drawn out, and he goes, I don't give a shit about this, show me. Mm-hmm. And they're like no, general, we have battle lines drawn, we you know, this is an accurate representation. He goes, shut that. He's like, no, I don't care, I want to see it. And so he went out on top of the hill and they pointed to it and they're like, well, here's over here and this is this and this is this and this is what I was thinking. He goes, all right, now I understand, and I got the land. Now I can sit there and understand exactly what you're talking about, rather than you being like, yeah, over here there's kind of a hilly area, so we got to watch out for that, and we got to watch out for the, no, get out there. Hey, that's that hill that I was telling you about, and this is this old divot over here. Ah, got it. Now I understand. It's way better. So you got to stay involved.
Well, just think, how much more would you respect someone if they actually got up out of their chair and you was having complications with a guest or a customer or something, and you're trying to explain to that person and your leader or your manager is yelling from his chair, whatever Austin's saying is right, or as opposed to getting up out of his chair and walking and talking to that person or that guest in their face, being like, whatever Austin was saying, he's correct. Let me explain it to you because you're not listening to Austin. How much more would you respect the person that got up to share the conversation with you as opposed to just yelling the conversation your direction?
100%, yeah.
Makes a big difference, right? Part of also being keeping or gaining the respect is being transparent. When I say being transparent, it goes to like the, when we say calling a baby ugly. The unknown is scary. Be yourself in your staff's position. If the company has had a tightened budget, or they're going to wonder if layoffs are coming, for example, when change is on the horizon, keep your employees in the loop as much as you can. So there's going to be a major change. Instead of beating around the bullshit or trying to pussyfoot around, just going to be straight up and, hey, two people are getting laid off. There's nothing we can do about it. This is happening. The baby is ugly. I'm ripping the band-aid. Two of you motherfuckers need to tighten up your resumes, because two of you going.
Right. And then, and yeah, it sucks to deliver that news, and I understand that. But there's a way to be like, hey, you two, you know, two of you motherfuckers better tighten up your resumes. By the way, if you need help with those resumes, send them to me. I will help you out. If you need a letter of recommendation, I'd be more than willing to type up a letter of recommendation. Or if you already have one typed up, I'd be happy to read it, edit it, sign my name to it, and give it back to you. So that way it can help you out on your next job. No problems. Boom.
Except I'm helping for you, you Bobby. Yeah, I hate
except
you.
For you. You suck.
No, no, I'm kidding.
But it's, yeah, sometimes the baby is ugly and you can't do anything about it, and it sucks. And that is one of the worst feelings in the world, to be like, ah, this, I really wish I could change this, but I can't. And yeah, that does suck. But what sucks even worse is trying to lead somebody on. If you've ever been led on in a relationship, yeah, or whatever, or a job, and they're like, well, change is coming, we just don't know what's going to happen. And meanwhile, they're sitting in their back office, sitting there joking about who they're going to lay off and how many people they're going to lay off. That sucks. That's a shitty feeling to know. And if it gets out that you knew and you didn't tell anybody at the right time, people automatically lose all the respect in the world for you.
Yes. 100%. I know. I remember a job I had before. I often pride myself, and if you want to know the truth, come ask me.
Yeah.
Just be careful, because I'm going to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you in your final third?
I am in my final third. Did you want to go now, or? Well, you're having like cigar trouble. So yeah, you want to go now?
Yeah, this thing is pissed me off. Like a third of it is just look at that. A third of it's just like black.
I wonder what's going on with that. That's the third. That's the same third. Like, see the size of mine.
Is
burning the same as your side there. It's not necessarily a canoeing, but it's more of a cone. I'm not sure what's going on, but
you see, okay. Like that one side is just black. It's like crunchy, like it's already ash and it's like charcoal almost.
Yeah. Wow.
It's weird. I've never had that happen. I've never seen that happen in my life.
Okay. Well, this is gonna be interesting.
Yeah. So final third.
I'm getting crunchy black. What are you getting?
Yeah, I'm tasting smoke, my asshole. Fig, a little bit of cedar, and chocolate.
Chocolate. I'm definitely hitting that chocolate. I'm getting cedar. I don't know if I murdered my fig. Reason why I said that, because during the middle of the show, I ran out of my old fashioned and I started drinking straight VS, Hennessy from a flask. And so that probably killed the fig a little bit. But I'm right on point with you with the chocolate.
I only have
dried like fruit.
Dried. I would see dried fruit too. anyways. All right. So being transparent, that's key. You also have to know the limits. So if workers are still disrespectful after all of your attempts to try to earn their respect back, if they're still disrespectful, or if one or two bad apples ratchet up their level of disdain, you got to take drastic action. Let them know their behavior is unacceptable. Explain why it's important to maintain that proper level of respect at work. It's not easy to gain back the respect once you've lost it, but it's possible. It takes time, a lot of time and a lot of effort. But you also have to start by having a higher regard for yourself and workers, and it's usually going to lead them to reciprocate. So my thing is if they're being if you've lost respect for somebody and they're just being openly, blatantly insubordinate and disrespectful, then it's time to lay the law down. Yeah, it sucks because you know that you fucked up and you did something wrong, but now two wrongs don't make a right. So now you got to sit there and go, nope, unacceptable. Don't say that again. I'm still the boss. You have to respect me in these four walls. I don't care if I made a bad call and you don't respect me after this. I get it. Like I'm trying to win this respect back. I'm trying to work with you here, but your actions are making it impossible for me to do this because you're causing dissent and causing almost a mutiny out there, and I can't have that. So either change it or find a different job, because I will help you find a different job if that's what you want.
And I almost hate going to that level. I always hate, like, I am such and such. You have to respect me. I hate that because I want the person to respect me for me as a person, as opposed to respecting my position.
Yeah.
But if all else fails, because if you see, we're getting to the end of this list, but I also added two more because I felt they were very important as well. If you have to get to that point to where you have to kind of like flex your muscles a little bit to show that you're the alpha male of the whole situation, that's kind of like your last straw.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember back when I was working for you, we had a boss that was over you and nobody liked this guy. He mumbled, he stuttered when he talked, he wasn't very clear, he didn't know exactly what was going on. Everybody just kind of like brushed him off as not knowing. His boss had to come down and tell, kind of have a chat with everybody about, if you don't respect the person, you have to respect his position. And I always was like, the fuck did you just say to me?
Yeah.
I don't respect him for shit because he sucks. Like, I don't care about his position. I just don't. He sucks at his job. But at the end of the day, he was right. Like, I still had to respect that he had the authority to tell me what to do. And even though I may or may not want to do it, he was in that position.
I remember that guy. I don't know if you know. I remember that guy. And he was like, I'm the fucking bus driver. And I yelled back. I was like, well, you fucking driving the bus the wrong way. You might want to turn around.
Everybody didn't like that guy.
I don't know if you know it, but he actually changed a little bit after that. After that, I don't know about his boss after he talked to him, but after I had that yelling match with him about he's driving the bus the wrong way, he actually changed a little bit. I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed he changed a little bit. He was a little more passive. He was more listening. He was more engaged of probably not to where the rubber meets the floor, but at least one level up to have a better understanding.
I'll be honest, I avoided that motherfucker like the plague because I did not respect him, so I didn't want to have to deal with him, so I just avoided him. And I just, if I could avoid dealing with him, then I did, because I didn't want to have to I don't want to say kiss his ass, but I didn't want to have to deal with him and show that respect because I didn't respect him.
Yeah, I had a little mentorship push to help me out with that guy too, so.
Yeah.
As I said, we was getting to the end of the list. I added two more. We don't necessarily have to read through the whole scenario because we both know what these both are because you work for me and I've worked together with you. So you kind of already have an understanding because these are two things I kind of already live by just going through to try to help gain and keep and regain or whatever the respect of the subordinates or worker bees, however you want to see it. The first one I put on the list, first of the two I put on the list is always pull your weight. Avoid the appearance that you're not. I've always was like, I would never give you a task I wouldn't do. And if you're doing a dirty, shitty task, if I have the time, 8 times out of 10, I'm right there with you doing the same shitty, dirty task.
Yeah.
I will show you that I can build a widget just as well as you can, if not better. I may even share some tips and tricks of the trade that I have learned throughout my process. But I'm right there in the trenches when need be, when I have to be, and sometimes even because I want to be, I'm right there with you. I always try to pull my same weight. If I'm not actually with tools in hand, pen to paper, I'm always doing something to propel or move the whole group forward.
Yeah. I remember, I don't know if you do, but I remember I challenged you to a task. Let's see who could do the task faster. Yep. Do you remember it?
Sir, to be honest with you, I've been challenged a lot.
Yeah.
By you multiple times.
I was a young buck wanting to prove myself, so I'd come with the best. I was aiming not to miss. So
by the king, you better not miss.
Yeah. So I challenged you to a task, and I straight up, we were doing good. I was neck and neck, and then you walked off and went to go finish the task. And I was like, "Where are you going?" You're like, "I'm already done." I was like, "The fuck!" And I like immediately everybody around was like, "Damn, he just beat you." So after that, after I challenged you to that task and I lost, right? You showed me as a young buck like how I wasn't all that. My younger guys then challenged me to that same task. And I was like, all right, let's go. I said, if you can win, then I'll buy you a Coke or I'll buy you lunch or whatever.
Yeah, lunch is on me.
Yep. And they came at me and they swung hard and I whipped their ass. And I said, just because I lost to that motherfucker ain't meaning that I'm losing to you. And I was always by my people's side. I was always there trying to pull my own weight. They could see that I was doing the job. Even if I wasn't doing a down and dirty task, I was always taking care of something else to make their job easier, better, more efficient. I was figuring out a new process, something we could do to make it better for those guys.
I remember those days. Betting lunch with some of the subordinates. I remember that. I'm still owed a lot of lunches, by the way. Not by you, but just by a lot of people in general.
Yeah. Oh, no. I didn't. I was always smart enough to just pay my debts right away because I was like, I'm having this all over my head. Fuck that. Last thing is probably one of the most important points that we can make. And that's, respect is a two-way street.
Yes.
I can't say it. I'll say it louder for those in the back. Respect is a two-way street. I can't shout it loud enough. If you don't respect your employees, they are not going to respect you, period. So if you don't ask for their opinions, if you don't ask how they're doing, if you don't figure out, you know, who they are as a person, if you don't take their ideas seriously, they're immediately going to start losing respect for you. So you have to show them that you respect them. Even if you may not respect them as a worker, you at least respect them as a human being and as a person. You don't have to be all feely, lovey-dovey. Oh my gosh, how was your weekend? How was this? How was that? Are you okay? How's the family? How's this? How's your feelings? Do you have enough stress? Do you have too much stress? Too little stress? Are you okay? You don't have to do all of that. Hey, right. You doing all right today? Yeah? All right, let's get this job done. Hey, you guys got any ideas to make this place better? Just give them to me. I'll listen. I'll try to incorporate the ones that I feel that we can make the most money out of. And I'll talk to the people who I didn't give their ideas much of thought, and we'll have a conversation about it. You know, you don't have to sit there and be a super touchy-feely type person. I'm not a super emotional guy.
Yeah.
I don't care about people's emotions. In my personal, Austin's personal opinion, I don't think my feelings should change how I do at work. I think I've done it before. I've had somebody pass away in my family, and I came in that same day and I worked a whole shift, and then was like, all right, by the way, I need to take some vacation time tomorrow because I got to go to a funeral. I had someone very near and dear to me pass away on Tuesday, and I got a notification at 11:30 at night, and they said, hey, they passed. And I was like, man, damn, that sucks. I went in the next day and I went to work. I said, and I left my emotions at the door. And as soon as I got out that door, I broke down in tears because that person passed away. But I knew I had emotions at work. But I know that if I needed some time, my boss respected me enough to say, hey, are you doing okay? Yep, I'm good, boss. All right, cool. And if I needed time, hey, can I take a couple minutes? I'm getting overwhelmed because of, you know, things that have happened. Yep, take as much time as you need. Take an hour. Why don't you go take an early lunch? All right, cool. Thanks, boss. Boom. Yeah. That's something as small as take an early lunch can be a world of difference.
It's just really that two-way street. You don't go and tell your subordinates, like, I got to babysit you fuckers because you suck. And instead, you could just walk over and be like, hey, I noticed we got a lot on our plate today. Is there something I can remove from it? Because I don't want you guys to be overwhelmed, instead of just saying, I'm tired of babysitting you guys, however you want to word it. Just having that respect in a two-way street fashion, because of my position, because of the position, not necessarily my position, but because of your boss's position or something like that, it's kind of already inherent that you have to respect that person. You don't necessarily have to respect the opposite direction. But if you respect in a two-way street fashion, meaning that you're going to get respect because of your position, you should also respect your workers, because they're the ones that are going to make the money for you. They're the ones that are going to get your bonuses. They're the ones that where the rubber meets the road, and they're the one dealing with the guests face to face. They're the ones dealing with all the paperwork face to face, head on. So yeah, they're only going to make you look good in the long run. So the respect should be a two-way street, because without absolutely them, you're not going to get a respect of your bosses or even your peers on your level if your people aren't respecting you. Because I know I've done it. I can sabotage my boss 100%.
Yeah.
But I'm the type of person that don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, and my goal at work all the time is not to make myself look good, is to make my boss look good. Because if I make my boss look good, that makes me look good by proxy. Because my boss is going to see that I'm making him look good. I'm taking things off of his plate. So if I take things off of his plate, he's going to turn around, if he's a good boss or she's a good boss, they're going to turn around and take things off of my plate, and they're going to be like, hey. And then if their boss goes, hey, your team's been kicking ass, be like, hey, it's not me, it's my team. My team's been killing it.
Yeah, I'm taking care of them. Yeah,
I'm taking care of them. They're taking care of me, and we're just getting the job done. Like this is easy for us.
Make it do what it do, baby.
Yeah. And so I don't have a problem because all these guys are taking care of me, and I take care of them, and that's why I do certain things that you may not agree with or see the logic in my leadership style. But this is why we do it. And they're like, yeah, I'm not going to question your methods anymore. Boom. You just got somebody off your back, and then that makes their bosses work even easier if they're like, hey, I got this one team that's kicking ass. It's led by this team leader, and they're kicking ass, and now that boss looks good for their boss, and just goes up the road.
Yeah. Like, you know what, Austin? I respect you. I double checked your work. You seem to be I'm not here on the weekends, and you seem to take care of all the paperwork and do all the inspections or whatever that needs to be done over the weekend. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. You know what? Lunch is on me today, guys.
Boom.
Oh, really? Lunch is on you? Perfect. It's just wonderful. It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
It's easy.
100%. And no, this does not mean, hey guys, you've been really working hard, so here's a pizza party for you. No, it's legitimately getting down dirty with your folks and being like, hey, who, where do you guys want to go? You guys want to go to steakhouse? Let's go to steakhouse. Lunch is on me. Let's have a couple beers at lunch.
Even with that, I mean, just doing a generic blanket one isn't necessarily always good. Be specific.
Yeah.
Like, you did this. You hit a home run today. You know what? Billy Bob hit a home run yesterday. You got, oh man, I just love my team.
Mm-hmm. I like to set incentive goals. Hey guys, if we can reach this sales goal by Friday, I'll take everybody out for sushi. I'll take everybody out for some hibachi. Whatever the case is. What? Really? Yeah. Let's go. This is my task to you guys. You do it. Take care of me. Boom. I'll take care of you guys by feeding you lunch on Friday. Fair enough? Hell yeah. Cool. Let's do it.
Well, I'm going to say thank you for writing in, Hope. Got that. I hope everything we went over kind of helped out and answered your question. You know, give us some feedback. Let us know how we did on your topic that you actually selected. And any other listeners that's out there that have something they want to ask, share, or just want us to deep dive in, just go ahead and hit us up on the Instagrams or directly through our blog, through our emails. However, our link is in the bio tree of our Instagram at Leadership of the Leaf, all one word.
Yeah. As you guys can see, we do take requests seriously. We love this stuff because if there's a topic that we covered, maybe it was in a sidebar or a previous episode, and you guys are like, I just don't understand how you guys can feel this way or how you guys understand, like, think this way. This doesn't make sense to me. And you want to, you know, you want us to go at it from a different direction? Let us know. Hey, I didn't like the way you guys talked about topic this because in my experience, X, Y, and Z. And we'll be like, all right, cool. Let's talk about it some more, and we will have a nice conversation. I don't have a problem going over past topics and sitting there and coming at it from a different direction. Everybody learns at a different speed. Everybody learns with different analogies, and I trust me, guys, we have tons and tons of analogies and experiences and all sorts of different things.
And plenty of cigars to go with it.
100%. We love smoking cigars and talking leadership. These are two favorite things to do in the world.
So if you was to purchase the cigar we just smoked, Julius Caesar by J.C. Newman, would you buy a single? Would you buy a 5-pack? Or would you buy a box?
All right. Based off of the flavors, I'd buy a 5-pack. Based off of my construction of my burn issues, because it finally, the burn issues went away at the last like nub, I would say single. So cutting it kind of split in the middle, I would probably lean a little bit more towards a 5-pack. It was a good cigar. I enjoyed the flavors of it, but those burn issues, I want to smoke another one and see if I get the same burn issues, because I know you kind of had something similar. but I'd probably say a 5-pack.
Well, my friend, we actually going to differ on this one because I rather enjoyed this cigar. As I announced earlier, this is my second one of this one because I really wanted to try it off air so I can really get the flavor profiles of everything. For me, this is box worthy.
Really?
The size, everything about the cigar for me, especially because it's not super, like it's not a 2-hour burn or an hour burn. Mm-hmm. It's roughly 45 minutes to an hour. I smoked this one pretty slow, so it was an hour. Box worthy for me all day long. Box worthy.
And I'm not saying that I wouldn't smoke another one and then change my rating to a box worthy, but as of right now, I'd have to say 5-pack just because I had so many problems. I was smoking 3/4 of a cigar and crunching up the other quarter of a cigar for a good chunk of time towards the end. The beginning of the cigar was great. I enjoyed the heck out of this cigar. The flavors were good. It's just those burn issues just don't lend it to being box worthy to me.
What is nothing worse than frustrating than having a cigar with burn problems.
Yeah.
There's many a times I'm like, you know what? I'm done with the cigar. I'm not fighting a cigar just to enjoy. I'm supposed to be relaxing. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. Maybe your second one or your third one or whatever, it'd be better. But as of right now, our votes, you're going 5-pack and I'm going box worthy.
Mm-hmm. So, I can tell you if I had another problem with this and a second one, I might go down to a single.
Yeah.
Like I said, the flavors were good. I enjoyed the heck out of the flavors.
That's a very fair assessment.
It's just the construction issues were a huge issue for me. But I bet if I had a second one, I'd probably go up to a box worthy because I noticed you didn't have near as the issues as I did. So I'd like to give this another shot and we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, good episode. My name is Dice.
I'm Austin.
All right. Until next time.
Remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.